This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
You're listening to Feminist Current, making waves in the mainstream.
Let me clear space for you to sit beside me. You don't need your back against the wall.
You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. On Saturday, December 5th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter will host their annual Montreal Massacre Memorial Event at the Vancouver Public Library. The event happens in congruence with the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women on December 6th, also the anniversary of the murders of 14 women at L'École Polytechnique in 1989, also known as the Montreal Massacre. The victims were targeted by a male shooter because they were women. He shouted, "You're all a bunch of feminists. I hate feminists," as he opened fire. This year's December 5th event will feature film screenings, lectures, roundtable conversations, and more, and is free and open to the public. I spoke with Hilla Kerner, collective member at Vancouver Rape Relief, about the event and, more broadly, what's changed and what still needs to change in terms of the national conversation around male violence against women. Here is that interview. First, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about the history of Vancouver Rape Relief's Montreal Massacre Memorial Event.
So from the very early days after the Montreal Massacre, Vancouver Rape Relief used the day that was announced by the government, December 6th, as a national day for action and remembrance on violence against women, to mark this day in a particular way. On one hand, to expose male violence against women, because what was so profound about the massacre that women all over the country understood it to be as part of the spectrum of male violence against women and could anchor their own experience on part of that spectrum. So we're using that day to expose and highlight and reveal how men attack women, but also to celebrate women resistance, to celebrate feminist analysis that advance our way to strategize against this male violence. And we're intentionally doing it in a public space that allows the public to come to the event, but also to counter Le Pen and many other sexist attackers' attempts to silence women, to push women back to the domestic domain.
Conversations and activism around ending violence against women have been happening for decades now, particularly thanks to the second wave feminist movement. But do you see anything as having changed since the massacre in terms of those conversations? You know, has the feminist movement made progress in terms of how we talk about male violence against women?
I think that the commonality and the frequency of male violence against women is much more clear now, and that women can anchor their own experience in the bigger understanding of women's experience of male violence. So I think women started doing it very powerfully in the second wave when consciousness raising women's groups and the Montreal Massacre and women rising up after that gave it a strong push. And I think we're definitely still in that phase of women understanding male violence against women as a phenomena. What we are not fully successful in achieving is understanding that violence as a direct expression and reinforcement of women's inequality. So really, we will end male violence against women when we will end women's oppression and when we will end the power imbalance between men and women. That's really what will end male violence against women and the other forms of oppression that compound on that, the race and class oppression. So I think we didn't win on that yet. We didn't win that rape, battering, sexual harassment, prostitution, pornography, all those forms of violence connected to each other and feed from each other, and the reflection and a very, very effective tool to prevent women from achieving liberty and freedom. What we did achieve as a movement is a tremendous phenomena of anti-violence services to women. So women know now that often they will have a place to go, that there will be women's groups who will support them, provide them safety, and back them up in their fight to hold them accountable. And it's not just important for the individual women who are using the services, but it's a clear message to all men. Women have a way to get away from you. So the existence of a transition house or RIPCA center is really crucial as a frontline service for women in crisis, but also as a clear message to all men. We're going to back women up. You're not just fighting her, you're fighting all of us.
Mm-hmm. There's a really big conversation happening around rape on campus right now, particularly over the past year. And so, you know, even the mainstream media has begun to play a role in holding institutions to account. Just recently, for example, the CBC aired a documentary about UBC's handling or mishandling, perhaps, of rape allegations on campus. Why do you think this is happening now?
Well, it started in British Columbia, at least. It started from the UBC assault on in public spaces, the stranger attacks that the media really like to highlight and to discuss. It's a very safe topic in terms of dealing with sexual assault. It's socially the most comfortable issue in terms of rape, that it's strangers who come in the dark. So the media love these stories. And that's how the first attention got, especially to UBC. But the media cannot resist personal stories, and it was a powerful strategy that these women used. Personal stories are sensational, and the media would cover them. And the women who came forward knew that and used it to hold the university into account. So it was just a smart move. Unfortunately, more often than not, that will be the only reason the media will cover stories about sexual assault and other forms of male violence against women. If so often we get a call from a journalist asking for a victim to speak. And unfortunately, a lot of time, if we don't have that victim, if women are not willing to go through the hurdle of expressing their personal experience, the media will not be interested. I think the public is a bit fed up with higher education institutions who become more and more interested in profit and less as a genuine education institution. And universities are entrenched with preparing students to the workforce and not attached at all to use the platform that they have to advance and improve the value that people have when they leave the institution. So the demands from women that the institution not only will be a safe space, but also will promote equality between men and women is a really important demand, especially if we understand the big picture, and women taking on the university is a really effective way to get it.
Mm. And, I mean, what recommendations do you have for the media in terms of covering rape culture? You know, how can they play a better role in fighting violence against women?
So I think it's not sensational and it might not sell papers, but if the media will really fulfill its role, they will offer a deep, comprehensive analysis to violence against women. We also have problem when expression are become rhetoric, they become empty. So nobody really understands exactly what rape culture means. And pornography is definitely part of rape culture, pornography promoting the objectification and the sexual violence against women. Many other forms of sexist topics in the media, and you know, in our cultural world, promoting sexist behavior toward women that has to do with rape culture. And the other thing that the media has been trying to do, and not very effective, that they did take on the issue of women failing to get justice from the criminal justice system. But unfortunately, the overall message that we're now dealing with is discouraging women from going to the police, when really the pressure should be on the police to be diligent, proactive, thorough investigation, collecting evidence and witnesses, and getting out of the way to get men being faced as judgment of the court. So sometimes, even when the media in general understands the problem, the solution or the message that the media promotes is not really in the advancement of women. And, of course, the overall goal for us in the women's movement is a transformative social change, and mainstream media will never participate in that. And it's not just about women's liberation, it's about other forms of oppression. The coverage of Occupy or Ideal No More was atrocious in terms of the mainstream media, because the mainstream media is part of those who benefit from the existing social structure. So it's not in the mainstream media's interest to promote dramatically a worldview that will undermine its own power.
And, you know, we're talking about rape culture a lot more than we did in the past as a culture. Mm-hmm. But what aren't we talking about? What's missing from the public conversation about violence against women?
I think that when you're saying we talk much more about rape culture, it's still in a bubble. I think that the mainstream journalists, the mainstream media, which is, by the way, dying, is not talking about rape culture in general. Still, there is a jargon of rape culture, but the stories that the media is bringing forward are individual stories about individual women who were attacked by individual men. So the big picture is missing, but connecting all forms of male violence against women is a crucial missing piece. The bettering of women, the industry of pornography, of course the phenomena of prostitution, sexual harassment at the workplace, they are all institutions, powerful oppressive institutions that reinforcing male violence against women, and the media does not do that. Not only they deal with individual women's stories as individual women's stories, but also they deal with each phenomena as individual or separate from other expressions of male violence against women.
And what do you see as the biggest hurdle for the feminist movement today? You know, what and who are we up against?
So I think there are many, many obstacles at the moment. I think one of them is we living in a very neoliberal capitalist society, which means that women, working class women and poor women, have to spend everything, all the time that they have to survive on jobs that they're not paid enough, on getting shelters and food. So we're missing women who would have been natural members of the movement, but also natural leaders and visionaries, because they have no room to move. They have to survive, and they're fighting for their lives. So there is a lot of individual resistance. But when women have to work many, many hours and scrap for food and the other basics, it's very hard to also be politically fully active. Another hurdle that we're dealing with is the false myth of we already achieved equality. Now women's oppression is sold to women as liberation, especially we see it through pornography and prostitution. So the propaganda that the sexist capitalist forces promoting to women that you already got it. And unfortunately, some women are falling into it and cheering and leading this voice that really is very oppressive for women and taking us backward, let alone not forward. I think the messages towards women that they have to be in alliances with their male partners, and this is where they should be loyal to, are very, very strong. It might look different, the pressure might be different, but the bottom line is still the same. Young women are trained that they, in order to feel their womanhood, to fulfill the womanhood, they need to be with the men. So it might not come from the church, but come from the Hollywood industry, but those messages are there. Heterosexuality and aligning with your men, and it's undermining women's solidarity. Still, many, many women have no other choice. It's an economic necessity. They have to rely on a man to provide for themselves and the children. But some middle-class women actually have options, economic options, but not really social options, not to be so attached to a man and to have room or to be able to work for the solidarity with other women. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we live in a world that promote individualism, and which is false individualism, because individualism is sold for us only as a way for us to be silent and be part of the herd. But there is such a promotion of individualism and personal happiness that undermines the collectivity and the solidarity of women with each other. This is in terms of the general movement. The anti-violence movement, which was always an important wing of the general women's movement, is facing a lot of particular pressure. One is funding and other provincial and national regulations press women's group to offer only servicing and not to have any ability to fight for overall social change, and also press women who volunteered and work in those services to treat women as clients who need to be managed and not as sister in a solidarity fight. So that's a particular burden that the anti-violence movement is facing.
Can you tell me what you hope to achieve from this year's event?
Well, we have a very rich program. We know that many allies from Vancouver, from British Columbia, and from North America are coming to talk to each other, to share with each other what we know about male violence, strategizing the resistance. There will be fabulous examples of women resistance from frontline services like Rape Crisis Center and Transition House, and transition houses, to self-defense, to class action against the RCMP, to writing books, to producing plays, to conducting marches and protests. There will be a really beautiful display of the many, many ways women are holding individual men accountable and women resisting male violence against women. And the topic, as every year, will include all forms of male violence against women, prostitution, wife battering. We just learned about the seventh case of wife murder in British Columbia this year. We had 15 cases last year, so wife murder and how the state is colluding with this form of male violence by keeping women poor, by not allowing women to have legal aid, and by the criminal justice system being so weak and not responsive to all women who are calling about all forms of male violence against women. So we will deal with wife battering, with sexual harassment, including the lawsuit against the RCMP, pornography, rape, and fathers and other men raping their daughters, their children, which also is known as incest. So we will discuss all those forms, and we'll expose and discuss some recent cases, but we will all definitely celebrate and mark women's resistance against all these forms. One important highlight is Rachel Moran, our ally from Dublin, who has been leading the fight for abolition of prostitution in Ireland and is an important player in the international fight to abolish prostitution. So she will speak about her book, Paid For, and will be able to offer her insight, both from her personal experience and her political activism, about fighting prostitution.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Looking forward to see everybody there.
You just heard an interview with Hilla Kerner, Vancouver Rape Relief Collective member. For more information on Vancouver Rape Relief's Montreal Massacre Memorial event taking place this Saturday, December 5th, visit www.raperelief.shelter.bc.ca. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. Feminist Current is a syndicated show produced by Megan Murphy out of Vancouver, BC, Canada. For more information on the show, please visit www.feministcurrent.com. If your station would like to air Feminist Current, you can find episodes at audioport.org or email us at info@feministcurrent.com.
Mercy, 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 mercy. Thank you.